I asked people this week to tell me what they thought the life of a novelist was. Sitting around in cafes was one. Paris came up a lot. Naps in the afternoon, lunches with posh publishers, frequent parties, a house in the country, and spending the odd hour easily typing out words that lead to fame, fortune, awards, and bookings on Oprah. With Zadie Smith and Jonathan Safran Foer, Nicole Krauss, and Grant his new issue proclaiming the next rising stars, the glamour seems to be as blinding as the other Parises, only a tad smarter. But then I asked a few novelists I know about the reality. Sure, they spend time in cafes, but mostly they use the free wireless, racing between part-time jobs and typing on an old laptop in a basement suite that generates maybe a few $1,000s for a book that takes years to write, an hourly wage of sometimes a few cents an hour. So tonight at the Legion on Main Street in Vancouver, eight young novelists have agreed to tell us why they do it, given the truth behind the fiction. They're hopefully going to explain why BC has managed to become a hotbed for talented novelists, despite the rain and the rents and the often really rotten pay. I'm Vanessa Richmond, and joining me tonight is Kevin Chong, author of Roca Nova and Neil Young Nation, Stephen Galloway, author of Finney Walsh, Ascension, and The Cellist of Sarajevo, and a writing prof at both SFU and UBC. Anne Stone is here, author of this year's Delible. Elaine Corden, author of a yet-to-be-signed novel. Michelle Kim, author of La La Joy, due out in fall 2008. And Nathan Sellin, author of short story collection Indigenous Beasts. Thanks so much for joining me. So the first question I have for you tonight is about fiction and nonfiction. Now, sales figures have led some publishers, some agents, and some media to suggest that fiction is out and nonfiction is in. But you guys are the anti-trend. So my question for you is why you do it, why you bother to toil away for hundreds, if not thousands of hours, alone, with only email and Facebook to connect you to the world.
I don't even have Facebook.
I Facebook-assided myself last week. This is sad.
Are you masochists? What makes you write fiction?
I think that the perception that nonfiction is exponentially hotter than fiction is a false one would be one thing I would say. It's not like it's a choice. If for most fiction writers, you take away their ability to lie and there's nothing left. So it's like saying, you know, how come the guys in the CFL aren't in the NFL? It's because they're different sports, not because it's not a choice.
They always say that the fiction publishing industry is dying. They keep putting out more books every year, so you know it survives. And there seem to be more and more people publishing books and wanting to be writers. And so,
I kind of like that there's no money in it myself, because besides the fact that I have to work for a living, but I have absolute freedom. When I sit down, there's really nothing at stake to anyone when I write, right? Except for to me. If what I was working in had a sort of closer relationship to commodification, if it was considered useful, then I wouldn't have those kinds of freedoms. It would be more institutionalized, and I wouldn't be able to determine the kinds of questions that I pose in the way that I do it. So.
Yeah, let's talk about that a bit more. I mean, if the average Canadian publishing contract at a small publishing house is about $3,000 for a novel, and a larger one it can be $8,000. I mean, this varies widely. Of course, it can be much more than that. But how much does that really affect your desire to write? So for each of you, is it discouraging hearing that, or is it motivating in a different kind of way? Is it irrelevant? Nathan, tell us. Go ahead.
I guess if I thought I was working for some massive payday, I might work a little longer every day, but really, I guess for me at least, it's not a huge factor. There are much better things one can go into to make a lot of money, and I don't think that's a great relation to anyone.
Elaine, go ahead, what were you
going to say? Yeah, just exactly what you said. I mean, I don't think anybody, like any art, and it's sort of a cliche for a reason. If you're doing it for the money, you're always going to be hooped. You're always going to be hooped because, I mean, people are going to smell that. And, I mean, you're not doing it because
you imagine yourself making a living at. I certainly don't have given up on that. But, I mean, you're doing it because you have to, and because there's a story inside of you that needs to come out, and it becomes not something you do for a living. It's something you do to live, and that's what it is for me anyways.
I think it's true. Like, I think a lot of people do it because they have to. There's no choice, right? I mean, I wish I didn't have to write. Yeah. I wish I didn't have this in me sometimes, right? Because it's frustrating, and I sit there and I'm angry. But, you know, when you get it, it's amazing. And, you know, it's just the way it is. You have to.
It can be kind of like a lottery ticket, you know? Like, there's the hope that, you know, what you write will sort of reach a wider audience, and that you learn out of your advance and you get a big advance and stuff like that. And even when it doesn't pan out, you know, you still have that in your life. And I know a lot of people put down being a writer, and they talk about all the negatives, and I've been on a lot of panels where that's all you talk about, how terrible it is. But it's terrible having this 9-to-5 office job that you hate. It's terrible, you know, like doing a lot of things, and it's terrible not to be able to do what you really want to do. And the fact that you're able to write a book, keep writing, you know, is a small success, and you shouldn't overlook that. Being a writer is not like, talking about being a writer shouldn't be like talking about living with a chronic illness. It shouldn't be like talking about how to survive a bear attack or something like that. It's you know, there's like challenges in it. It's not always financially rewarding, but it can be fairly rewarding in other ways. And some people do okay the way, you know, like, not necessarily selling books. Sometimes you can do okay teaching, you can do okay freelancing, and you do okay like working in television, and the writing is a sort of a springboard for that kind of stuff.
Well, I think Kevin makes a very good point about how the, you know, if you asked any writer who just sold 1 million copies what they were thinking about, it wouldn't be the 1 million nickels or whatever they got from the royalties, it'd be the 1 million readers they're just getting. That's the appeal of it.
But, I mean, this Canada Day, for example, aren't you going to be thinking, why is it that my fellow Canadians don't buy as many books? I mean, if you were a novelist in a different country, there would be the chance of a bigger payday in the way that there isn't here. I mean, is that ever on your mind?
I went to IKEA to buy bookshelves, and it's this labyrinth, and you're sort of dragged through this. I hadn't ever been there before and seen it as this kind of mecca with people sort of traveling through it, and they'd stop and they'd look at this consumer purchase. And I was sort of sickened, and it took a very long time to get out. You have to follow the path out. And wait, and I... And I didn't understand that. I didn't understand the fact there was no center at the center of it, and people looking at these items. And I'm with you. Like, when I get up, I feel really blessed that I can get up and write on the days that I'm doing that and not working. Or even when I'm working, I'm lucky to have a very good job teaching, and I love teaching. So those things are real blessings, to be able to use your mind and your heart too, like all of your thinking at once in those kinds of occupations, as opposed to something that empties you and doesn't give back, and I don't know.
Yeah, I made $55,000 a year when I was 25. I worked for the federal government, and this is a horrible thing to say, but it was after 9/11, and I woke up every morning and I would think, maybe terrorists have bombed the building that I work in and nobody got hurt and I won't have to go in. I mean, what kind of life is that? And I mean, I don't even want to talk about my last year's tax return, but God, I'm so much happier because I'm doing something that I hope lasts and I hope means something. And, you know, when I write something and somebody sends me an email and says, God, that spoke to me, that to me it's worth more than anything. It's worth more than anything, and like, it doesn't mean money anymore.
It is true that in Canada we have a lower per capita group of readers than, say, Holland or European countries, but the flip side of it is 40 years ago you wouldn't have been able to find 6 novelists in Vancouver, period, that had, you know, had work published. I mean, if we're going to talk, if this is about being young writers, you can't have ever been a Canadian and a young writer and have it be at a better time. The other thing you have going for yourself as a Canadian is if you write in English, you're writing in the world's dominant language of literature, you can go to all the, you know, those countries will consider publishing your work in a way that we would never consider publishing some unknown Polish writer in Canada. So, I mean, like Kevin says, it is easy to sound like a telethon, but the reality is it's never been better, really, for Canadian writers.
So why is that? I mean, BC is a hotbed for writers, and given the financial issue, why is that? What draws people from around Canada and around the world to our writing and our pay rates? Why is it flourishing here?
I mean, I was saying, I lived in Britain for a while in London, and I worked at the books program at the BBC, and I brought a bunch of books, like Sheila Hetty, Michael Winter, a bunch of sort of young Canadian novelists that are writing to them, and they just were totally blown away. Totally blown away. They've never seen anything like it. It was completely fresh, completely new. And, you know, and I was really proud, right? And I really think it's going to catch on everywhere. Just a matter of time. You know what? I think there's, in the language, there's a simplicity and a clarity. And there's this resonance to universal truths that just kind of gets everyone feeling something, right? I don't know.
I think part of it is Canada doesn't have a sort of mainstream commercial publishing business, right?
Yeah.
There's no giant publisher of sort of smutty detective novels. If you want to be a writer in Canada, the literary example is the example you go towards, generally speaking. I mean, as opposed to, say, in the States or Britain, where they have huge markets for sort of more populist, say, less craft-based forms of writing, you can just as easily sort of fall into that. I think more easily fall into that than you can here. I mean, to be a science fiction writer in Canada, you have to be extraordinarily dedicated to the idea of science fiction. Not... Because there's just... It doesn't exist for you to... Really.
Okay, so that does get me on to another question, which is one novelist friend of mine, I think I was telling you before, his family every Sunday dinner says, "Darling, have you thought of writing porn?" So the question I have for you is, what the most ridiculous non-writing job is you have done to pay the rent to keep you writing?
I have written porn. I worked for a doctor who also ran a modeling agency and occasionally a diviner and other kinds of... There were a variety of businesses besides the doctoral one. When it was open, it was sometimes closed. Occasionally, they would shut him down and revoke his license, and he would get it back. but he did cure my bronchitis, and he wrote a series, and I won't get into too many details because it was a very specific kind of interest that these books had, and if I identified it, I would find the niche. His books would be that niche in Canada. It would be the only one with that.
The toe jam fetish or something.
Yeah, kind of like that. But he would just speak into a tape and send it home with me, and it got to be, I was supposed to work on this 200-page manuscript, and we were at about page 600, and it had become weekly. He'd take me out for lunch, I'd hand over the pages, he'd hand over the tapes. We developed this little relationship, and he started giving me gifts, right? So, and I can open these because this is my rent, right? And I'm like, I don't know what's in here. I don't know if it's progressing beyond. So I have this friend, actually it was Terry Jordan, who had moved to Montreal at the time. And I said to him, I said, "I'm giving this to you from the porn doctor. And you can have whatever's in this box so long as you never tell me what was in it," right? I gave it over to Terry. Terry said, "Okay." And we've fallen out of touch. We were in touch for a few years. He never told me. So it's been, I'm sort of wondering now.
That
it's been 10
me.
Years and
that
I still don't know what was in the box.
A human head.
After eight. But everything's been in the box in the last 10 years, you know? Everything's been in that box.
Waitressing jobs, house painting.
Well, Kevin, I think you and I were talking a couple of weeks ago about how calling yourself a novelist or what have you allows you to do other types of writing which are ridiculously light, and you can sort of live with yourself going to review Faith Hill and go, oh, that's okay because I'm writing, you know? And I wonder sometimes if it's not more noble to work in a machinist shop because at least you make something that lasts, and that seems less ridiculous to me than some of the nonfiction writing that I've done to allow myself to write fiction. So, I mean, I'm sure we've all had ridiculous jobs that we don't want to think about, but...
I once worked in a paper mill that made super absorbent paper for feminine hygiene products and adult diapers. Highest paying job I've ever had.
It's quite a skill set.
Yeah. And drive a forklift.
When you tell people you're a writer, do you get, what kind of response do you get?
I don't tell people I'm a writer because it does sort of, it's like saying you're paying for dinner tonight. Like,
I don't tell.
It's a whole awkward basket of questions. What are you working on, or what have you written? What are the stories about? You know, like repeating the back of your jacket to
I've always wanted to be a writer. Let me tell you about all the things I did.
We should work together because you're good at writing it down and I have all these great ideas.
Here's a poem I wrote.
And so you actually get, you know, you get, if nothing else, you have this conversation piece in that conversation. People really are really interested in writing in a way that you wouldn't be if you said you were a systems analyst or something.
Mm.
Or a human resources manager. Like, they don't ask you questions about that process. But you, at the same time, you don't always want to answer those questions or start that conversation.
Don't disappoint them.
Yeah,
I think people tend to romanticize it in a huge way, and they don't see the sort of tower of Diet Coke cans around your office, and, you know, it's... I don't know that... And
I like
maybe
Coke
I'm
zero. I'm putting on a Coke Zero. Yeah, it's really,
I really want a sidebar on it, like the whole Diet Coke versus Coke Zero
Coke
thing,
zero,
but we'll do that after.
When you tell someone you're a writer, though, it goes one of two ways. Occasionally, they've heard of you, and it's awkward. More often than not, they haven't heard of you, and then they apologize for not having heard of you, as though you're offended. And then they ask you, what do you write? And you say, I say novels, and they say, oh, fiction or nonfiction. And then after you sort of swallow your tongue and say, there's no such thing as a nonfiction novel, you say fiction, and they say, oh, what kind of stuff? Like detective novels, romance novels? And then you say, oh, no, more kind of literary fiction. And then they look at you blankly, and you try explaining to someone what literary fiction is if they don't read, you know, it's like, you know everything else, it's what's not that. It's like, we can sit around for the next 5 hours and argue about what it is, and we actually care. So I take the ego hit and say that I look after my kids. I know how housewives feel now because people do not respect that at all. But they stop talking to you and you can sort of go to the bar, get your drink, and you're...
Did you say you're a teacher at UBC?
No, because that leads them to the trail. What do you teach? Creative writing. Oh, what's that? Oh, I teach writers how to write. Oh, are you a writer? And then you're right back. So no.
I just say I'm a journalist and no one cares.
Yeah, that's true. Then they just think you're scum.
Okay, that leads me to the last question. Last question is this. Despite the fact that there will always be procrastination, there will be novels in Canada, and they will be good, but what ways could people encourage you? What way could they help you? How could whoever encourage Canada to have an even better, thriving, young novelist scene? What could people do for you? If it could be anything, what would help?
Stop signing my books up from the frickin' library and then telling me about it. That would be nice. Writers don't get paid for library books. That really, it's like Napster. It's worse than Napster.
Yeah, let's dismantle the library system.
We should burn down the library. That's what we should do, because they're stealing from us.
I don't know, you could always ask for more. You could always ask for people to come over and do your laundry and like just like in the Michael Moore movie.
Yeah, just
and,
like
and make in, your in dinner. You know, it's not like we live in France or anything. Apparently, in France, they don't cab drivers don't let artists let writers ride for free. That's what somebody told me.
That sounds like an urban legend. Come on.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you very much for joining me. I'm Vanessa Richmond, the Thai Young Novelist panel, and thank you.